This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent wherever they may live upon the earth. Well, good to be with you, ladies and gentlemen. We have a lot to talk about today, and excuse my absence from yesterday, but I was on the road, and we are taking up again today Chapter 10 of Jewish Supremacism, and I'm doing, of course, an audio book of my book, Jewish Supremacism, and I'm in the middle of a very deep discussion of Israel. And we have three major chapters in Jewish Supremacism on the nation of Israel, how Israel is truly an expression of radical Jewish extremism. And we have a perfect example of Israeli terrorism and terror by what's happened in Lebanon in recent days. And that's precisely what this chapter is about. It's Chapter 10, Israel, Supremacism Through Terror. Well, let's begin. I will begin with a quotation by the former Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, as quoted by prominent Israeli journalist Amos Oz. Quote, Leibowitz is right. We are Judeo-Nazis, and why not? Now, don't be shocked if they, Israel's founders, instead had killed 6 million Arabs here, or even 1 million, what would have happened? Sure, two or three nasty pages would have been written in the history books. We would have been called all sorts of names, but we could be here today as people of 25 million. Even today, I'm willing to volunteer to do the dirty work for Israel, to kill as many Arabs as possible, to deport them, to expel and burn them, to have everyone hate us, to pull the rug from underneath the feet of the diaspora Jews, so they will be forced to run to us crying. Even if it means blowing up one or two synagogues here and there, I don't care. And I don't mind if after the job is done, you put me in front of a Nuremberg trial and then jail me for life. Hang me if you want, as a war criminal. Then you can spruce up your Jewish conscience and enter the respectable club of civilized nations, nations that are large and healthy. What you lot don't understand is that the dirty work of Zionism is not finished yet. Far from it. Unquote, Sharon. The first obstacle to Zionist objectives was that Britain envisioned a Palestine as portrayed by the Balfour Declaration, a society that would protect the civil and religious rights of all who live there. To dislodge the British, whom the League of Nations had mandated to govern Palestine, the Zionists developed a fine art of terrorism as a modern weapon of political revolution. Menachem Begin, Abraham Stern, Yitzhak Shamir, David Ben-Gurion, and many others began a campaign of bombings and assassinations. They hanged and garroted British soldiers with piano wire and left their mutilated and booby-trapped bodies to be found by the British authorities. Israeli terrorists blew up the King David Hotel in Jerusalem, killing more than 90 people. Their operatives invented the letter bomb technique. Jewish hitmen even assassinated the United Nations mediator in Palestine, Count Folk Bernadotte, because he dared to express concern for the rights of the Palestinians. In his final report to the United Nations before his death, Bernadotte scathingly referred to, quote, Zionist pillage on a grand scale and the destruction of villages without apparent military need. By the way, as a side note, sounds like Lebanon, doesn't it? It would offend basic principles to prevent these innocent victims of the conflict from returning to their homes while Jewish immigrants flood into Palestine, threatening to permanently replace the dispossessed Arab refugees who've been here for centuries. Unquote. The Zionist campaign worked, eventually tiring of the terrorist campaign waged against them and despairing of a world press that covered up these crimes. The British finally threw up their hands and announced their withdrawal from the region. With the British gone, the Zionists could have their way with the native peoples who had dared to live on the land they coveted. No force was left to restrain them. Aided by both the military and financial support of both the capitalist USA and the communist USSR, as well as by the huge sums of money that poured in from Zionist coffers from all over the world, the Jewish blitzkrieg rolled over their enemies as decisively as the biblical account of the Red Sea rolling over the Egyptians. With military victory certain, two significant problems still confronted the Zionists. The first was that there were hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who obviously would not sit back and let the new Jewish state take away their rights and their lands. Secondly, Palestinians owned more than 93% of the land of the new nation, and that was a serious roadblock to the new Greater Israel. Quoting literally from the book of Joshua, Jewish religious leaders warned that Israel must drive the Palestinians out of their borders. This is from Joshua 23:12-13. Else, if you do in any wise, go back and cleave unto the remnant of these nations, even these that remain among you, and make marriages with them, and go in unto them, and they to you. Know for certainty that the Lord your God will no more drive these nations from out of your sight, but they shall be a snare and a trap unto you, and a scourge in your sides, and pricks in your eyes, until ye perish off this good land. Unquote. Zionist fanatics ultimately solved their Palestinian problem with mass expulsions, murder, and well-planned, intentional terror. What the press refers to in modern times as ethnic cleansing. Palestinians who were born there and whose ancestors had lived there for countless generations were rounded up by the Israeli stormtroopers and driven over the border. Told they could never return to their homes, those expelled had little more than the tattered clothes on their backs. Many who refused to leave their homes were massacred by the Israeli military, and the Zionists publicized the massacres, intentionally causing widespread panic and flight among the Palestinians. Committing atrocities against the Palestinians became an integral part of the Israeli strategy. When Jewish terrorists raped and massacred the residents of Arab villages, those in the surrounding villages naturally gathered up their children and fled for their lives. And that's precisely what the Zionists wanted. Once the Zionists set up their state and secured their initial borders, minus approximately 630,000 pesky Palestinian men, women, and children, the beneficent government of Israel forbade them ever to return to their homes, their businesses, their fields, and their flocks. By the time the Israeli War for Freedom ended, only about 170,000 Palestinians were left within Israel's borders. The Jews, of course, had prominent and powerful spokesmen and supporters all over the world, especially in media, telling of the courage and righteousness of little Israel. By the 1960s, there were millions of adults and children around the world who, like me, were enthralled by the heroic story of Israel, a story romantically retold by the Academy Award-winning movie Exodus. At that time, I, just as most Americans of today, had scant knowledge of the gross injustice committed against the Palestinian people. The most well-known atrocity of the First Israeli War was the massacre of Deir Yassin. On April 9, 1948, after a cessation of fighting in the small village, the Zionist terrorist Irgun gang, led by Menachem Begin, murdered 254 people, most of them women, children, and the elderly. For 2 days, these Zionist terrorists had murdered men, women, and children, raped women, crushed the stomachs of pregnant women, and stolen their possessions. A Red Cross doctor, Jacques de Rainier, chief representative of the International Committee of the Red Cross in Jerusalem, gave a chilling account of the massacre in his official report. The Rainier arrived at the village on the second day and saw them mopping up, as one of the terrorists called it to him. It had been done with machine guns, then grenades, and was finished off with knives. They decapitated some of the victims and maimed 52 children in the sight of their mothers. The terrorists cut open 25 pregnant women's wombs and butchered the babies in front of them. After his retirement in 1972, Israeli Haganah officer Colonel Meir Piel stated the following about Deir Yassin in Yediot Aharonot, a major Jewish publication. Quote, the Irgun and Lehi men came out of hiding and began to clean the houses. They shot whoever they saw, women and children included. The commanders did not try to stop the massacre. They were taken to the quarry between Deir Yassin and Givshal and murdered in cold blood. The commander of the Haganah unit that controlled Deir Yassin after the massacre, Zvi and Corey, made this statement in the Israeli newspaper Devar. Quote, I went into 6 to 7 houses. I saw cut off genitalia and women's crushed stomachs. According to the shooting signs on the bodies, it was direct murder. Albert Einstein, among with other concerned Jews, wrote a letter to the New York Times in 1948 decrying Begin as having, quote, openly preached the doctrine of the fascist state, unquote. He went on to describe Deir Yassin in these words, quote, on April 9, terrorist bands attacked this peaceful village, which was not a military objective in the fighting, killed most of its inhabitants, 240 men, women, and children, and kept a few of them alive to parade as captives through the streets of Jerusalem. The terrorists, far from being ashamed of their act, were proud of this massacre, unquote. Menachem Begin boasts of the importance of the massacre in Deir Yassin in his book, The Revolt, The Story of the Irgun. He wrote that there would not have been the state of Israel without the victory of Deir Yassin. The Haganah carried out victorious attacks, this is a quote, on other fronts. In a state of terror, the Arabs fled, crying, Deir Yassin. Israel's first prime minister, David Ben-Gurion, no slouch at Jewish supremacy himself, was quoted at describing Begin with these words, and I quote, Begin undeniably belongs to the Hitlerian type. He's a racist, ready to destroy all the Arabs in his dream of unification of Israel, prepared to resort to any means to realize this sacred goal, unquote. The instigator of the mass murder, Menachem Begin, later became the prime minister of Israel and even received the Nobel Peace Prize. Such an award is symbolic of the incredible worldwide Jewish media power, for Begin had been guilty of crimes not dissimilar to those of the Nazis whom Jews are still hunting and prosecuting today. Alleged crimes of the Nazis, Begin is certainly guilty of exactly the same kinds of alleged crimes, except the difference is perhaps that Begin boasts of these crimes, whereas these other individuals absolutely deny them. Yet, instead of facing trial and punishment for crimes against humanity, Begin received what many would consider the world's highest honor. When I first learned of Deir Yassin, I would recount the Israeli massacres and ask my friends, have you seen any TV documentaries or any Hollywood movies about the Israeli terror of Deir Yassin or of many thousands of other Israeli acts of terror against the Palestinian people? You've heard plenty of violin music for Jewish victims of Hitler, but have you heard any violins for the women at Deir Yassin who had their babies cut from their wombs by Jewish supremacists? In the intervening years, there have been many more terrible acts of Israeli terrorism. Perhaps I can ask the same of those now reading this text. Have you heard any violins, any long and heartfelt documentaries for any of those other thousands of Palestinian victims of Begin, Shamir, Barak, and Sharon? Befitting Israel's long record of terrorism against the Palestinian people, Israel has a nasty habit of electing its most notorious terrorists and mass murderers as heads of state. The United States has a whole division of the Justice Department dedicated to hunting down Nazis who have allegedly committed crimes against humanity, while America doggedly pursues elderly suspected German war criminals. American presidents have state dinners honoring Jewish ones. The massacre at Deir Yassin was not the only one Israeli forces committed. In the May 6, 1992 edition of the Hebrew daily Haaretz published an article by Guy Ehrlich called Not Only Deir Yassin. That article outlined a pattern of terror and murder. Ehrlich notes the Israeli historian Yair Yitzchaki as saying the following, and I quote, "The time has come, he says, for a generation has passed, and it's now possible to face the ocean of lies in which we were brought up. In almost every conquered village in the War of Independence, acts were committed, which are defined as war crimes, such as indiscriminate killings, massacres, and rapes. I believe that such things end up surfacing. The only question is how to face such evidence." Ehrlich and Yitzchaki point out that Israeli authorities are still covering up the murders, nor did the massacres cease after the establishment of the Jewish state. They continued in times of both peace and war. Following are the names of some of them: Sharafat Massacre, Kibya Massacre, Kafir Qasim Massacre, Al-Shamu Massacre, the Sabra Shatila Massacre, Orankara Massacre, Al-Aqsa Mosque Massacre, the Abrami Mosque Massacre, the Jubilee Massacre. There were further killings and expulsions of the Arabs as the Jewish state expanded. In subsequent wars and military incursions, Israel drove more hundreds of thousands of Palestinians into relocation camps. Plagued by hunger and disease, they bore remarkable resemblance to wartime concentration camps. Lebanon also fell victim to Israeli aggression in the 1980s and 90s when it was bombed and invaded. Estimates of civilian casualties in Lebanon exceeded 15,000. The Zionist state also surreptitiously helped create and support rival factions in the Lebanese civil war, which added tens of thousands to the death toll. The extraordinary diaries of Moshe Sherrett, who had once shared the prime ministership of Israel with David Ben-Gurion, reveal Israel's treachery in the Lebanese civil war. Sherrod had been forced out of the cabinet because he would not go along with what he felt were Ben-Gurion's clandestine and immoral actions. After Sherrod's death, his son published a diary despite a long battle of intimidation and legal maneuvers by the Zionists. Jewish author Livia Rokash quotes Sherrod's diaries in her book Israel's Sacred Terrorism. The diaries reveal how Israel purposefully created the Lebanese civil war to further Israel's imperialist ambitions. In May 1955, passages in the book, Sherrett describes Israel's plans to destabilize Lebanon's government, a plan that eventually produced the 1978 Lebanese War. Sherrett quotes Moshe Dayan, Ben-Gurion's defense minister, at a secret cabinet meeting on May 16th, planning to foment Lebanese civil war as an excuse for Israel to go in and annex land with water rights to the Litani River. In the first invasion of Lebanon in 1982, 10,000 civilians died and 1/2 of a million people were driven from their homes. In the course of the fighting, Israeli forces devastated the city of Beirut, which before the war was described as the Garden City of the Mideast. During the Israeli invasion, the USS New Jersey, sitting offshore, fired shells into some of the Lebanese towns. The U.S. involvement in Israel's 1982 war destroyed what little credibility America had left in the Mideast and cost our taxpayers billions. It also cost the lives of 241 U.S. Marines. More than 1,500 women, children, and elderly people were butchered and the Sabra and Shatila refugee centers under the watchful eyes of the Israeli invaders. And as a side note, as you know, Israel's recent invasion of Lebanon has killed at least 1,200 to 1,300 civilians, many of them children and women, civilians. In fact, most of them were civilians, whereas the death toll from the Hezbollah rockets and other activities were primarily Israeli military. The bombing of Beirut and the wholesale bombing of the entire country caused misery to millions and millions of people, and tens of thousands of homes where families live were destroyed, and many, many thousands were wounded and scarred and damaged for life. Israel's Prime Minister Ariel Sharon is one of the world's most bloodstained terrorists. Now, when this book was written, he was Prime Minister. He is, of course, not now. He's still in a coma. He may be soon to pass. But that doesn't excuse and that doesn't change the fact of his terrorist record. He's responsible for the cold-blooded slaughter of at least 1,500 men, women, and children in the Beirut refugee camps of Shatila and Sabra. Even a formal Israeli commission found Sharon personally responsible for the Lebanese massacres. In 1982, as Israel's defense minister, Sharon directed Israel's invasion of Lebanon and the carpet bombing and devastation of the city of Beirut. In Lebanon, four times more women and children died than in the September New York attack. Now, this terror bombing was carried out by Jews using jet fighters and bombs supplied by the United States. After the Israeli military devastation and occupation, Sharon forcibly removed Palestinian resistance fighters from Lebanon. Many Palestinian women, children, and old people were left behind in refugee camps near Beirut. The United States publicly guaranteed their safety and promised that they would quickly be reunited with their loved ones. When Sharon plotted their murder, he knew that he planned a bloody act of terrorism against the refugees, and he knew it was an act of treachery against the United States, one that would raise intense hatred against America. On the night of September 16, 1982, Sharon sent phalangist murdering squads into two Palestinian refugee camps, Sabra and Shatila. With Israeli tanks and troops surrounding the camps closely to prevent any of the Palestinians from escaping, the murder squads machine-gunned, bayoneted, and bludgeoned Palestinian civilians all that night. The screams were heard all night. The next day and the following night, all happened while the Israelis surrounded the camps, and they simply listened gleefully to the machine-gun fire and screams coming from inside. Sharon then sent in bulldozers to hide as much of the atrocity as he could. At least 1,500 Palestinian men, women, and children were butchered, and perhaps as many as 2,500. An official Lebanese investigation put the figure at 2,500. Even after the efforts of Sharon's bulldozers, many Palestinians remained unburied, and Red Cross workers found whole families, including hundreds of elderly and little children, with their throats cut or disemboweled. Uncounted numbers of women and girls were also raped before they were slaughtered. Ariel Sharon was sought for trial by a Belgium court for crimes against humanity, much like the way the Hague Tribunal succeeded in extraditing former Yugoslav President Slobodan Milosevic for crimes against humanity in Kosovo. On a technicality, the effort was first blocked by a high court in Belgium, but now it was on again and finally off again. And since the inquiry was initiated by Belgium, a number of potential witnesses hostile to Sharon have been assassinated. Although he was sought for his Shatila and Sabra murders, Sharon could have been tried for any dozen of a number of other massacres committed during his sterling career. Crimes against humanity that go back at least as far as 1953. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz recalls Sharon's leading of a massacre in the village of Kipya in 1953. The soldiers of Major Ariel Sharon killed 70 Palestinians in the reprisal raid, most of them women and children. Unquote. Israel's murder of the Palestinian refugees after the United States had publicly guaranteed their safety in Sabra and Shatila was not only a crime against humanity, but also one of treachery against America. Sharon and the others involved were completely aware of America's well-publicized promise of the refugee safety. It was certainly that betrayal which led to one of the worst acts of terrorism in American history. The Beirut Sabra and Shatila massacre formed the chief motivation of the Lebanese suicide bombing attack that killed 241 American Marines in Beirut less than a year later, and it clearly demonstrates how American support of Israeli terrorism leads to terrible consequences for our country. The Los Angeles Times, in discussing a revealing book by a former agent of the Israeli Mossad, Secret Service, showed that the Mossad had foreknowledge of the terrorist attack on the Marine barracks in Lebanon in 1983, but treacherously did not warn America. And here's a quote: among Ostrovsky's more shocking allegations are that the Mossad failed to share with the U.S. detailed intelligence that might have averted the 1983 suicide bombing of the Beirut Marine barracks that killed 241 U.S. servicemen. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's about it for today's program. We're going to continue on with the second part of Israel, a terrorist state, in tomorrow's broadcast. And we will take up the original Qana massacre. That's right, the first Qana massacre, with incredibly gruesome, and I hate to say it, quotes from eyewitnesses at the event. And then we will go on and talk about the 50 ongoing years of Israeli terrorism, the tortures in the Israeli prisons, the weapons of terror Israel has, biological, chemical, nuclear weapons, and even the testing of biological weapons on hapless individual Palestinians. So we're going to go ahead and complete this chapter probably tomorrow, and then on the next day we'll begin the chapter on Israeli terrorism against, that's right, the United States of America. Thanks so much for being with me, and I hope all of you will take the time to spread this broadcast all over your neighborhood, your cities, your states, your nations, and your world. Together we can expose this blight upon humanity. Israeli radicalism, extremism, Jewish extremism is a danger to everyone. It's not just a threat to the Palestinian people or the Lebanese people or the Syrian people today, or for that matter the Iranian people today. It's a threat to the people of the United States and to the entire world. And in tomorrow's program, you will learn how this terror is something that goes deep into the heart of Jewish extremism. Thanks so much, and I'll see you tomorrow.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddu.com.